Hi, I'm Catherine Park, the host of The Work We Do. We are bringing you a special episode today, interrupting our regular programming, so we can discuss the closure of the Strait of Hormuz and how it could affect global food security. Welcome to The Work We Do. I'm here with Maximo Torero, FAO's chief economist, and David Laborde, the director of Agri-Food Economics and Policy Division. Maximo, it's been 2 weeks since the conflict in the Middle East began. Could you tell us about the impacts of the conflict so far and what you're seeing?
Look, as it was the case of the war in Ukraine, the case of the COVID-19, we were not expecting these events, and especially we were not expecting the intensity of the events. What this conflict brings is linking the energy market with the fertilizer market with the agri-food systems. Again, brings the systems together. Why? Because this conflict is affecting oil, the mobility of oil. This region controls around 20 million of barrels of oil pass through the Strait of Hormuz, which is around 25% of the global mobility of oil in the world. And as a result of that, we will see significant changes in the price of oil. We will see increases in the price of oil, which already are there between 20 to 35%, reaching levels of $120 or $115 per barrel. Despite some policies already put to release stocks, which tell us the danger of the potential increase in prices. Why? Because that will increase input costs, that will increase operational costs, will increase logistical costs. The second important element is fertilizer and the fertilizer market disruptions, which are also coming from this region, and especially nitrogen, but other fertilizers. 30 to 35% of the global urea comes from this region, 20 to 30% of the ammonia exports comes from this region, and 30% of fertilizer trade goes through this Strait of Hormuz. So this will also put an impact on the prices of fertilizers, of urea especially, which are already increasing more than 20%. Why is this important? Because that's a key input for agri-food systems. It's a key input for the planting season, and it's a key input that will, of course, affect how much I will plant in the future. So it's not only an impact for today, but could also be an impact if this continues for a longer period for tomorrow. And finally, these two elements, the logistical, the energy prices going up, and the input prices going up, will affect, of course, the food systems, the agri-food systems. It will affect the production because it's increasing the farm input cost, and that will affect how much we can sell these products, and will increase the prices of the commodities, of key commodities like wheat, rice, maize, and other staples which depend especially on these inputs. We already are seeing that the prices of the commodities are increasing. If we look at the short term of the future prices, we already see that there is expectations that they will increase. And of course, this will impact all the net food import countries. It will impact not only the countries on the region, which many of them are intensively importers of food, but will also affect any other country in the world, which is net food importing, which of course are the poorest countries in the world. And that's where we need to put the emphasis today. So in summary, the linkage of oil prices, fertilizer prices, and the impact over the agri-food systems because of the increase in these input costs will have an impact if this conflict continues because of the importance of this region in terms of these commodities.
David, could you take us a little bit deeper and give us an overview of what is happening at the regional level across different regions, perhaps?
Yes, Catherine. So Maximo has reminded us that in the past we have seen different crises, and each crisis has some similarities and also differences. But the same crisis will impact different regions in different manners. It depends how you are exposed to the crisis. So first, of course, we have the countries in the Gulf that are being disconnected from the global trade. And it means that for them that are traditionally large food importer, the region import 100 million tons of food every year. So that's a lot. Some countries import 90% of their food or more. So the fact that food cannot go through the Strait of Hormuz is a food security concern for them. And of course, because there is a conflict, people cannot operate normally. There are restrictions. So really, first, you have this food security situation in the Gulf country. and in the neighboring country too, like Syria, like Yemen, that were already very vulnerable to start with. At the same time, food cannot get in. As Maximo has said, energy and fertilizer cannot get out. So first, there's a loss of income for this country. And then we would start to see the impact moving around. And next door, you have Asia. And in Asia, Asia imports a lot of energy, a lot of fertilizer, and actually sells some of the food. And so what you will see in Asia is rising prices, the need to find alternative source of energy and paying more for it. But also some farmers in Asia are going to start lacking the fertilizer and not selling some, for instance, their rice from India to the Gulf countries. Then Latin America also imports fertilizer from the Gulf countries, sell food, because actually Latin America is one of the global superpower in terms of food export. So is also going to be impacted, but with some lags. Now, the countries around the world differ geographically, but they're also in a different time, meaning that for farmers in Latin America today, they are not planting, but they are going to start to buy the fertilizer for their next planting season. So their production today is not impacted, but in 6 months, it can be. And so you have this particular pattern. Now, if I move to North America, in North America, farmers, basically 80% of them already buy their fertilizers. So not all of them, but they are going to operate this year more or less normally, but the energy cost is still going to impact them during the year. Now, Africa. So Africa has link with the Gulf country export some food. So East Africa exports some food there. So also we will see some issues in terms of income, and they will have less access to fertilizer. Now Africa use less fertilizer than Asia or Latin America. So the effect is going to be less important on their production, but still, you have a lot of smallholders that will have to pay more for their fertilizer, and that will impact them. So compared to Asia or Latin America, Africa is less exposed, but is initially more vulnerable. So you have this question of balance. And finally, you have Europe, and Europe will have to compete here also, like Asia, and with Asia to buy fertilizer and to buy energy product. So we will see this a wave of effect starting to move over time, impacting different regions at different points, and that where having an idea of how long this crisis will last is so important.
So Maximo, David just gave us an idea of how the impact might be different depending on how long this conflict continues. Could you talk to us about what we can perhaps expect depending on how long this lasts?
Yes. No. So what David was saying is extremely important, because it shows that depending on the needs and what the countries are importing and the regions are importing, the effects will be differentiated. And also, of course, depends on the level of income of the countries, because if they are not significant importers of food, they could be in a safer situation than, or more resilient situations than countries which are net importers. One specific issue is what will happen in Iran too. No? And Iran was already facing significant challenges on acute food insecurity, and prices were already going up, especially of oil seeds, especially of flour and wheat. This will be exacerbated, of course, because they import part of these commodities, and also they import rice, which will impact them even more. So the expectation is that prices in Iran will go higher, and that will put more pressure on acute food insecurity. But going to your question, what we are hoping is that this conflict will stop soon. Why? Because the sooner it stops, and the more, again, we recover the mobility around the Strait of Hormuz, that means that we will resolve the problems of oil, the problems of energy, and the problems of fertilizer flow, which is the key drivers behind the impact of this war. So we are assuming that we can resist around 3 months without bigger impacts that could be affecting. So if this finishes in 1 month or finishes in two, that would be optimal to avoid. Of course, it's optimal that if it finishes today, because the last thing we want is to affect the next planting season. But the situation continues, then we are moving into a very, very complex situation. Why? Because we don't have the capacity or the velocity in such a short period of time or 3 months to find alternative routes that can move the volume of what is being exported through this Strait of Hormuz, and we don't have the capacity to find other alternatives of sources of this type of fertilizers, of oil, and energy, which are impacting all the regions that David was explaining. So if it goes longer than 3 months, our expectation is that the impacts will be significantly more serious, not only in terms of prices of commodities, in terms of course, of prices of the inputs of fertilizers and energy, but it will also impact significantly the next planting season. And that will have a longer term impact. So that's why it's so important not to allow this to continue to escalate and extend the duration. And of course, if it moves farther than 6 months, then we will be impacting economic growth of many countries, developed and developing countries. The countries that are in a bad situation today, of course, will be the most vulnerable, but this will be affecting big countries that will have to grow less and will reduce their capacity to export and to import, and that will affect the world. We need to understand, if we remember in COVID-19, how interlinked the world is. So a shock of this type will activate all those interlinkages and will escalate the impacts in the medium and long term. And that's where we need to be very careful. There are, of course, other ripple effects that could be impacting in the medium and long term. One of those is remittances. This region is a significant supplier of mobile labor that comes from other countries like Bangladesh, Pakistan, to the region to work, to the United Arab States, to Qatar, to Dubai. Those individuals working in those countries are being impacted because of the current situation, and therefore the level of remittances that they will be sending back to their countries will be significantly lower. Also, it's important to understand that if this continues more than 2 or 3 months, for sure we will start with higher oil prices that will make very profitable biofuels, and that implies that we will have this tension between food for food and food for biofuels, which could exacerbate even more the situation of prices for consumers. It will be a good way for farmers to increase their resilience because they will have an alternative place where to sell their commodity at a higher price, but it will also affect significantly the consumers. One good thing in the world right now, which allows us to believe that 2 to 3 months could be reasonable of resilience, is that the world of today has enough supplies of food. If we look at the AMIS reports and the supply reports that we are producing, we have sufficient food right now, we have sufficient stocks. But clearly, the dimension and the intensity of the potential impact in the medium term, and even in the third month or the second month of this conflict, could make us lose everything we have recovered since the war in Ukraine and since COVID-19. So short term is what we want. We want this to stop as soon as possible so that we can recover and avoid the medium long term effects, which could be really significant and could affect many people in the world.
So David, Maximo just spoke about what we could possibly expect if the situation continues. You have been working on modeling and analysis of what we could expect possibly in the next 3 months, 6 months. Could you talk to us about that?
Yes, in such a complex situation, and we have seen that, you know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen in the next few months, but Maximo has already identified different channels of transmission and things that can make the situation worse or better. And I also talk about the fact that different regions are impacted differently. So in order to tackle this complexity, we need to use modeling tools and with them to explore different scenarios. And that's what we have done. So first, we are looking at the easy option, I will say, where the conflict stops within a month. Prices will go down. Hopefully, the amount of destruction will be limited and the world will continue to operate. And we also look at a scenario where during the next 3-4 months, actually, the situation will continue to deteriorate, potentially with longer-term impact in terms of capacity to navigate in the Persian Gulf. But still, at the end, a recovery at the end of the year. And then we have look at a more long-term impact through the economic growth channel that Maximo was referring to, because the rule of thumb is, you know, when energy price increase by 1%, economic growth go down by 0.1%. So, and that will change the future, including where we will be in 2030, when normally we will be assessing the agenda 2030. So we look at these different scenarios, we model them, and then we look at impact. And what we see first is that, yes, impact is going to be non-negligible for the world economy, with a reduction of overall GDP by half a percent, even in the short scenario. And of course, the longer the crisis, the more impact will be. On the short run, food prices will not be impacted too much, because also, as Maximo has emphasized, we're in a situation where supply is high. So we have enough food, and the cost effect is not going to be immediate. But also, with more time, we will start to see increase in the cost of production. When fertilizer become expensive, it means also that farmers will use less fertilizer. So then the supply will start to shrink. And if you add on top of that other effect, like the biofuel demand, that's where you can see much higher food price increase. But that's not immediate. And with the model, we can assess this, because this model are here to, you know, to rationalize the discussion, to not go to excessive panic, but to see the actual cost and issue that can emerge. But also with this model, we can think about something that may be less obvious. So I was talking about Africa, but Africa is a very diverse place. You have some countries that are actually oil exporter, and they are going to continue to export oil because they are not impacted by this navigation. And with high price of oil, they will make more money. And you have other countries in Africa that are importing energy, importing fertilizer, and it will be costly for them. So we can start to see, you know, even in this crisis situation, you always have winners and losers. And it's not like if some country or some actors are war profiter, okay? It's just the fact that prices change, and when the price increase, it's good for a producer, bad for a consumer. But when you start to think about what we can design as solution, it's important to look at this evidence, to understand this trade-off, and that's where I think this model are very useful. We cannot forecast the future, okay? We don't know exactly what the future is going to be, but we can look at different options to make sure that the policy recommendation and action that are taken are going to be resilient to some of the bad future that can happen, and will help to get to a better future.
Could I ask both of you how this conflict is different from the war in Ukraine?
Okay, so thank you for the question, because it's important to understand how things are differentiated, because there are three events, basically. No, we have the COVID-19, the war in Ukraine, and now we have this conflict. In the case of COVID-19, the major challenge was logistical, because people were focused on health, and they forgot that there is no health without food. And at the point that we realize, if you recall, at the beginning of the COVID-19, prices start to go up, despite we have enough food in the world, that's where FAO put a lot of effort together with AMIS and other agencies to come up with this lemma that there is no health without food, because we needed to improve the understanding that ports need to have the security measures for food to move across borders. That helped to resolve the problem. Therefore, we didn't have a food crisis in that period of time, because there was no need of a food crisis. Then comes the war in Ukraine, and the war in Ukraine has a specific characteristic. It touched two countries which are key exporters of cereals, Ukraine and Russian Federation, exporters also of fertilizers, especially nitrogen, and gas, natural gas, which was Russian Federation. So the impact was over supply of cereals, wheat, and also some flour, but also over fertilizers and over natural gas, which is an input to produce nitrogen. So the impact was on the market of energy, on the market of fertilizers especially, and also on the market of cereals. And in that moment in time, the situation of the stocks were not so high. We already were in a stress situation, and that exacerbated the prices that were already going up. Why? Because the recovery of COVID-19 already scaled up the demand for food, and there were climate events and other events that restricted the supply. To you, if you add to that the restriction of the exports from Ukraine, that will even restrict even more the supply. And of course, the demand was growing, prices exacerbated even more as a result of that. The situation now is mostly on energy and fertilizers, which will impact, of course, the food production in the future. But it's not about key exporting countries of cereals, like was the case of Ukraine. So yes, the impact will be more indirect through the energy market, which is a component of production, not only of core commodities, but also of food, the what you eat in the retail markets and the markets around. But it will also affect, of course, input markets of fertilizers, as it happened in the war in Ukraine. So it's different. It's not the same. But the one important issue here is that for the world, it was not so complex in the case of the war in Ukraine to cover the gap of Ukraine in the next planting season. And that's why we saw expansion of production in certain big countries like Brazil and so on and so forth, that allow us that after a period of the war in Ukraine, that gap was covered. Although the market structure was more concentrated, it was covered. In this case, it will be more complex to resolve the problem of oil and resolve the problem of fertilizers coming from this region. And also, it is more complex in the sense of the countries in the region because they are net food importers. So if they cannot get the food in, their local prices will go up. I don't know, David, if you want to add to that.
Yes, no, you have been very clear just to say that, yes, on one hand, as economists, it's very important for us to understand what impacts supply, what impacts demand, because it will put prices and prices of different commodity in different direction. And without this clear diagnostic, you may not design the right solution and the right intervention. You don't want to boost demand when demand is very strong, for instance. And clearly here in this case, we don't have a demand issue. So supporting demand can still make sense. But we have a supply side, not immediate problem, but through the next harvest season. And that's why targeting support to farmer is going to be quite essential. And Maximo also has raised the fact that, you know, we had an energy situation that is different from a food production situation because basically you can produce food everywhere. If you support your farmers, you can diversify. Energy, it's more complicated, especially for dense energy that you want to move over distance to bring it to different places. And that's where basically your agricultural supply is always more reactive if you have the right set of intervention. When dealing with an energy crisis, take more time. And that's why we have less option on the energy market on the short term.
Maximo, what can countries do? What are your policy recommendations to countries right now?
So look, in the current situation, it's very difficult to come up with recipes of solutions and policy recommendations. One of the reasons we are sitting here is because we build this situation room in FAO. And the idea of having this situation room, we will try to predict things, not only conflicts, but also to predict what is happening with climate, extreme events, what is happening with pests and diseases in the world, is to try to bring more information to the world. And why is this so important? Because it brings us some lights, despite the darkness of the situation. We're trying to switch some lights that will help policymakers make correct decisions. Now, the major and the most important short-term policy recommendation is that diplomatic efforts has to be there to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. That's, for us, the solution to the problem. That's why we hope we stop in a short-term situation where as soon as possible, mobility of vessels around the Strait start again. And that will help to stabilize immediately the markets because, as we were saying before, the markets have enough food right now, and there is no reason to have a food crisis in this point. Now, in addition to that, in the short term, we need to try to figure out also alternative routes, no matter they are not equivalent, but at least some routes that will help us to create some air, space, so that the prices don't move at a faster velocity. Keep working in coordination of deployment of reserves of oil, like it has been done by the energy agency in the world, but also try to keep looking at logistics, how we can mobilize food through different routes to the region, which is a food importing region, and how we can also monitor markets closely. And that's the role also of the Agricultural Market Information System that is hosted here at FAO. Financial support will be important for farmers, and that's where countries will have to put some emphasis on that, to, in a temporal basis, in the short term, because we hope this will be short term, that they can help if farmers have to buy fertilizers right now because it's needed according to the crop calendar. And that's something that with David we will explore in the future, what happens because of the crop calendar in each region, in each country. But if that is the case, then countries need to figure out policies that will help farmers to be able to procure fertilizers. At the country level, if you are a net food importer and prices of commodities go up, initiatives like the Food Import Financing Facility that the IMF implemented and call it the CHOP facility should be reactivated because it was a temporal facility that should be reactivated is to support net food importing countries because the import bill could increase and we want them to keep buying the same level of food. So, but those are temporal policies at the short term. In the medium term, I think, and we hope we don't need to move at that time. We hope the solution will be at the short term. In the medium term, of course, we will need to diversify import sources. We need to have better regional coordination and we need to have some contingency planning. Why? Because that's increased resilience. No? And this is also linked to trade. Resilience is not only local production, but it's not also the number of trade partners. And clearly, as we saw before in Ukraine war, in the war in Ukraine and the COVID-19, we need to increase resilience of countries. In the long term, again, investment in domestic production where you have comparative advantage should be a way to increase your resilience. Finding alternatives to fertilizers, nitrogen fertilizers especially, through innovations and new technologies will be important. Renewable energy will be central because we need to, although we are in a better situation in the world than before, because the energy mix have diversified a lot more since the war in Ukraine and even before, we need to keep in that path and we need to keep investing on that and again finding ways to increase resilience across the board. Now, one of the topics that we need to be very careful and we need to look very closely both in the short term, medium and long term, of course, is how acute food insecurity will evolve over time, especially in the regions, as David explained, that could be the most impacted. So Africa, especially Sub-Saharan Africa and Eastern Africa, which is not an oil exporter, which will be impacted. And those countries are already in debt distress and in many of them in food crisis. We need to monitor very closely to see how we can respond to that in the short and medium term if this continues. So I think that's the idea. We will continue operating, but this is essentially what we can say at this point. But the important thing, I believe, is to stop the conflict and to especially allow mobility of vessels across the Strait of Hormuz.